This is the Cypher Podcast, where we'll be diving into various gaming cultures, checking out some games, talking to some gamers about their gaming experiences. Cypher, Africa's ultimate gaming podcast.
Okay, so welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Normally, what we do here is just ask a question and frame it like a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, so let's get started.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So, I'd like to ask, who is Kyle Spencer?
That's kind of an open-ended question. But I guess for the sake of the podcast, I'm a lifelong gamer, and professionally, I'm the executive director of the Uganda Internet Exchange Point, and I do IT consulting. I've been doing that for a long time.
Oh, okay. So Uganda Internet Exchange Point.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with what that is, it's kind of a switch that allows all the networks in Uganda to talk to each other in Uganda, so that if you have traffic from one network to another network in Uganda, it doesn't have to leave the country and go through, Europe or whatever. And that has a lot of benefits. It makes the internet cheaper and faster. It enables things like online gaming in Uganda. Like we have our server at Liquid Telecom's network. And if you want to play on that server and you're using MTN, that local traffic goes through the UIXP. And if the UIXP wasn't there, that traffic would have to get routed outside the country and back in, which could increase your ping times to the point where it might not even make sense.
A lot of latency if it's going from outside.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, I got involved in the Internet Exchange Point along with a friend of mine named Simon, also known as Billy and Kid, because we wanted to do online gaming in Uganda. And the Internet Exchange was there, but it wasn't doing too well. And so we got involved to try to make it work better. And, not only because we wanted to have low ping times to local servers. Because back when we got involved, Uganda was still connected to the rest of the world by satellite before 2009, 2010. And so traffic between networks that didn't go through the Internet Exchange had like a 600 millisecond plus ping. So there was no way to. Yeah, exactly. So online gaming wasn't possible in Uganda without this thing.
Okay. So first and foremost, thank you for your work. We've come a very long way. It's still a long journey, but at least we know where we're going, right?
Yeah, man. Things are looking good, actually. There's been a lot of growth in the internet ecosystem in the region and around online gaming in particular. I mean, there's tournaments popping up in Nairobi all the time now and South Africa. You know, we even have our own tournaments here in Uganda from time to time. I mean, I remember in 2015, we hosted, we organized the first international video gaming tournament in Africa in Nairobi at Nikon. And we got guys, a team from Rwanda and a team from Uganda on a bus. And we all went to Kenya to compete for a cash prize that Ace has put up. And the tournament was also supported by Liquid Telecom. And the trick about that was that people were playing a Call of Duty tournament in Nairobi that was running on a Ugandan server. Right.
Really?
And people thought it was a LAN server in the room because it's only 9 milliseconds away over fiber. Right. And our message to the press was like, hey, if we can do this, banks can do this and other enterprises can do this. Right. So the internet ecosystem in East Africa now is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. I mean,
they're
in Nairobi and you're using a server that's in Uganda.
Right. And guys didn't know. They thought it was on the local LAN. So. But anyway, that's me. I'm the internet infrastructure guy and PC gamer, lifelong PC gamer.
Same here. I've been doing PC for as long as I remember, but just because of the environment I grew up in, I don't really mind which platform I can game on.
So you've always been a PC gamer too, huh? Like, how did you get into that? Because most people, you know, a lot of people get into console gaming, and I never really got down with console gaming. I felt like that the controls were sort of disabled.
For me, PC gaming was more something like my dad accidentally got me into.
Right.
Yeah, like back then, was it a Pentium 3, Pentium 4, something like that?
Okay,
like, okay. One of those PCs, right? We just happened to have one of those at home. And my dad, being that he used to work at, embassy, one of the U.S. embassy or something like that.
Right.
He was the IT manager or something like that. So
okay.
He had access to PC Gamer magazine.
I grew up on PC Gamer, man, like with Coconut Monkey and everything else and those demo discs.
Yeah. So I had a lot of those demo discs, especially 2001, 2002. The last one I remember was the 2003 disc.
What was on that one? Do you remember?
There was Tomb Raider on it.
Right.
Yeah, Tomb Raider. So that's how I got into PC gaming. Like those were the games I started off with. There was Demon Star. There was those games. So yeah,
I've actually
been looking for a certain game, but I just can't remember it. It's a strategy, a real time strategy game from back then, but I just don't remember its name.
Well, the big ones in the old days were like Command & Conquer, Red Alert, Age of Empires.
Yeah, and after, like, in around early 2000s was after Red Alert 2 and Tiberium Sun.
Right.
I had Tiberium Sun on one of those demo CDs. But
right. I got into the original Red Alert. I never really got into the original Command & Conquer, which came before Red Alert, but I loved Red Alert, and I used to make a lot of my own maps and do multiplayer with friends on that Westwood online service. And I used to just get my ass kicked, man. Some of the guys that played were really good. They'd send in dogs. Yeah. Like the first thing they'd do is send in dogs and like a couple engineers and just take over your construction yard. And you'd be done in like 30 seconds. Game over.
Advice for that. Always have some bears if you're playing the Russian.
Right. So in the original Red Alert, the trick was to have dogs as the defense. Because then they would eat the engineers, really quickly and defend your construction yard. But I actually have a similar origin story for how I got into PC gaming. My mother and father both met at IBM, which was the company that sort of kind of invented the personal computer. I mean, that's a bit of an overstatement, but still it was, the IBM PC is kind of what took off back in the early 80s, back in 1986. I had my parents got an IBM XT, which was one of their earliest models. And I was only 3 years old. And somehow I got introduced into the concept that this thing could play games.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know how to spell. So I was waking them up at like 6 a.m. demanding that they tell me how to spell Jump Joe and my other favorite games. And then I would spend like 20 minutes poring over the keyboard trying to find the keys. And that's how I learned how to spell, more or less, is trying to play games on an IBM XT back in DOS, in the DOS era. And that's ultimately how I got into systems administration too, because as time went on and games got more sophisticated, you had to, edit your config.sys and autoexec.bat and sort of unload modules that the computer didn't need to run the game, reboot the computer so it had more resources for the game. So you had to get into basic systems admin just to run some of these games back in the 286, 386 era when games and the technology started pushing boundaries. So that's how I got into it, is just like a really young kid.
No, then I think we sort of both got into PC gaming the same way. I mean, our parents are the ones that sort of introduced it to us accidentally, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. And it was really a blessing because, back in 1986, people didn't really fully recognize yet how important computing was going to be to everybody's personal lives. And, this was pre-internet. So I got a really lucky head start just trying to play games, and by virtue of the fact that my parents, had access to this technology. So
Wow, that's actually nice. Okay, so you said you're a very, very big Command & Conquer fan.
Well, I used to be into real-time strategy a lot. In fact, I still am. I still play Age of Empires 2 with some friends in Kenya over the internet. But actually my genre was first person shooters, right? Like I really got into gaming hardcore when Wolfenstein 3D and Doom, particularly Doom came out. That just took over my life. And I ended up playing Doom and Doom 2 for years and making my own levels and custom mods and sharing them with friends and doing multiplayer and our own custom levels and stuff. I used to play Doom multiplayer over a serial no modem cable. We hook two computers together and have 2-player deathmatch and Doom with our keyboards. On these old, I think it was like a 486 that we were playing on at the time, or maybe even a 386. And then Doom led to Quake. And when Quake came out in 1996, that was just the end of my life for the next, 10 years. Or longer, really. I mean, I still fucking play that game, but I played Quake. So when Quake came out in 96, that was also around the time when in the United States, the commercial internet really started to take off. We had graduated from things like CompuServe and Prodigy to things that were, properly internet with TCP/IP and more people were online with AOL or whatever, dial-ups. People had university connections. And so Quake really took off, and it took over office networks, and it took over, my personal life. And I got sucked into that and started playing competitively for a long time, and ended up running one of the best teams in the country in Quake 1. For Capture the Flag and Clan Arena, and just built a lot of friendships around that started online and ended up in real life. I've got some really deep personal connections that originate from Quake 1. So first person shooters has always been my jam. I still play a lot of it today, but I'm older and slower. I can't compete with the kids,
Hey, I get that. Anyway, for me, I got to know Command and Conquer, but not through PC, unfortunately.
Okay. How did you get into CNC without the PC? Like, it was on console then, huh?
Yeah, console. Like, after, some time, was it 2003, 2004 there? I got my PlayStation, and it was one of the first years. Yeah. I think I still have the CDs. Yeah, I still have the CDs for Command and Conquer. They're here. Yeah, I think they're around here somewhere.
That's pretty special because, most consoles are not really built for real-time strategy. It's a lot of, fast mouse movement and clicking and pressing hotkeys. And so that's pretty cool that you got into real-time strategy, through the console.
Yeah. The first time I played it, I didn't. I just put it aside because it was 007 Nightfire, and I'm like, this one's interesting.
Oh yeah.
Okay, let's go first-person shooter.
Right.
It was my friend who actually brought back my interest in that. And after that, I just kept playing it until, the CDs stopped working in the console.
Yeah. That was on PS2, you were saying?
Yeah, PS2, but the bigger PS2.
Right. I had the original PS2 as well. I never had PlayStation before that. I was a Nintendo 64 guy in the previous generation. But then I got the PlayStation 2, and I played a lot of RPGs and racing games on PS2. It just... The RPG genre was really well developed on the Sony PlayStation ecosystem, and I really got into that a lot on the PlayStation.
Yeah, when it came to RPG, it was quite good because let's see. Another game I played a lot when I first got my PlayStation was Shrek 2.
What is it called?
Shrek 2.
Oh, right.
I played a lot of that game to a point where Story has it. I don't know if it was overplaying that game because I played that game for, 24 hours? But the PlayStation got it shorted out. I don't know how that happened, but it shorted out. Imagine 24 hours, morning to night, and even midnight.
Right.
You're still playing that game, and then all of a sudden, just it's off.
Right. I think, that was still back in the time when I think these gaming companies were underestimating how much people would play these games, even if they knew they were popular, and we actually still see some of these, we still see some of that phenomenon with bad launches for games where the servers just crumble because people need to log into some matchmaking service and they don't anticipate the demand.
Yeah. Especially now, since there's a lot of people playing games, gaming has gone mainstream. So obviously when you have a server for something, people are going to flock to it. And especially if it's something people actually enjoy,
It's totally changed, man. When I was growing up and I was playing video games, it was a weird sort of counterculture that parents and the older generation didn't understand. I remember when Doom came out, it was around the same time as Mortal Kombat came out. It was 92, 93, 94. And there were politicians in the United States that were trying to ban these things because they were terrified of what they were going to do to society, right? These violent video games or whatever.
GTA comes out.
Right, of course. And that was hugely controversial because it's a game that's just more or less about running around and killing people and stealing things and committing crimes. And
it's actually named after a crime.
Right. And then when Quake came out in 96, the internet at the same time was also a thing, right? It was an interesting moment in culture because when the internet came out, you know, like look at online dating, for example, like today, everybody's on Tinder, Bumble, whatever these apps are right there. It's common to do online dating, right? You just point and click, even Uber, right? Like you go on an app on your phone and you summon a stranger in a car and you get in the car and you trust them to take you to where you're going. But back when, you know, the internet first started becoming mainstream, you know, in the CompuServe, AOL, whatever era, and online video gaming, the idea that you would meet somebody in real life that you met over the internet was psychotic. Like, you were definitely going to get killed, at least, right? And that's what society thought. And now today, it's like, you know, you don't even think about it. You just like, yeah, let me click a button and have a car come with a stranger and pick me up.
Yeah, like the internet has brought a whole new meaning to connecting to people you've not seen or heard of.
Right, and people have finally, you know, embraced it, and it's no longer there's no longer really a stigma as much as there used to be. I mean, I think there still is in Uganda a little bit today because, you know, again, it's the older generation that's not familiar with computers. And I think parents here, they see their kids spending all this time online and they probably get concerned.
The whole idea of gaming is more, it's not actually, people here find it hard to believe that gaming actually be a career.
Right. That's another whole angle to this, right? Back in 96, I keep touching on Quake, right? But 96, 97, I remember in 1997, that was the first major video gaming tournament. It wasn't necessarily international. It was in the United States. There had been tournaments before this, but in 97, the guys who made Doom and Quake got together with Microsoft and hosted the Red Annihilation tournament. And John Carmack, one of the guys who programmed Doom and Quake, offered up one of his Ferraris to the winner of this tournament. And this guy named Thresh, Dennis Fong, won the tournament. And that was the first, like, video gaming celebrity. That was the first, like, holy shit, huge fucking prize for video gaming. And that changed the whole game, right? And now, if you look at South Korea, you've got, like, football stadiums that you can fill up with people that want to watch somebody play StarCraft. And you've got million-dollar prizes for people playing Fortnite. And you can, like you said, you can make an entire career out of being a professional video gamer.
Yeah, was it 14-year-old kid that won, was it $3 million just for playing Fortnite?
Yeah, Kyle Bergdorf, I can't remember his name, but yeah, like it's incredible, right? And not only do you have the prizes for playing video games and you can make a living off of playing video games if you're good enough, but then there's this whole industry around it. Like, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's been bigger than Hollywood since 2009. And so you can develop a whole career in making games and you know, whether it's on mobile or console or whatever, and the whole gaming ecosystem, you can, you know, these guys in Nairobi, Nikon, you know, like these conventions and tournaments that they get together, they make money too. You know, there's the whole event side of it. There's the internet side of it. It's big business for telecoms. That's a huge source of demand for telecoms. So there's so much money in this now, not just players. It's been fascinating to watch it evolve over time.
That's very true. Especially like the whole idea of Nikon is a very good idea because essentially I actually participated in 2017.
Right.
Yeah, and it was just nice to see friends and other strangers coming together, showing their love of comic books, their love of gaming, you know. Just totally. You know, guys that just like to be creative, like 24, okay, not 24/7, but guys that are creative, coming together and showing their stuff, because there were some African comic book creators there. There were some African YouTubers there. Actually, I know a few friends from the Kenyan. I know a few friends from the Kenyan YouTubing scene.
Yep.
And then there was obviously the LAN party that was going on, but it was a 2-day event, but the guys that were there for the LAN party stayed there. And well, Guru says that it was cold as hell. And well, I can't sympathize because I was sleeping in my dorm at the time. So
right.
But that's commitment. They were there the whole night. So they were gaming. That was good.
Yeah, it was. It's a perfect confluence of sort of geek and creative content creation culture. You know, getting all the cosplay stuff going on, and the comic book fans, and the computer lovers. Gamers, you know, and there's a big enough crowd for that now in our region where I think, the time is right to do that to start doing that on a larger scale. I know so many people in Uganda, for example, that are anime fans, you know, and there's a growing video gaming community everywhere in the region because of better internet connectivity has made that more possible.
Yes.
And also it's become more accessible to actually buy games because more people have access to banking services than before. So the whole ecosystem is developing, and I think it's just really great to see stuff like Nikon, and I hope we can see, that start to take hold more in Uganda and we can start doing our own stuff here.
Yeah, I hope very soon we also get the idea and we're like, okay, let's make a comic book convention of our own, because I know that there are comic book guys here. I know that there are gamers here. I know there are anime fans here. Why don't we just get together and do it?
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting everybody together and somebody organizing it and getting a little bit of funding, and companies are happy to sponsor this. Yeah. You know, there's big money in this from telecoms. Just as an easy example, you know, they want customers and they want to promote the networks as best for gaming. And yeah, I remember there was a time when like Mountain Dew was trying to get into esports, although they never really made a big play in East Africa. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Actually, I was just talking to a friend who's one of the hosts on this television show here called Catch Up. And I think Coca-Cola had sponsored the first 30 minutes of one of their shows recently. And the show opened up. I think it's NBS Ketchup, and the show opened up with guys sitting on a couch playing Mortal Kombat. And that seems like a small thing, but if you rewind like 10 years ago, that was kind of the dream scenario, you know, getting mainstream acceptance and sponsorship for content on television that involves video gaming, you know.
That's
just cool to see.
Okay, well, wow, we've actually gone through most of the questions.
It's cool, man.
Okay. We're talking about titles that made an impact in our life. For me, Command and Conquer being one of them. Then eventually I wound up reaching Saints Row. You heard of Saints Row?
I have. I heard it's really good, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, you want to start playing it, start with Saints Row 2.
Saints Row 2, okay.
Yeah. Central is more like GTA, but a bit crazier.
Okay. Yeah. I say the same thing about Witcher. I tell people if they've never played Witcher before to get into Witcher 2 first, but Witcher 3 is good to start.
Assassin of Kings is a good place to start.
Yeah. That was a hard game, though. Witcher 2 was actually quite hard in the beginning. It was a steep learning curve, whereas like 3 is more accessible, so...
So three, what they were going for was like, it's been a while. Let's give them something something they'll enjoy despite not knowing the story. You get it?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It didn't require pre-existing knowledge of the universe to play. And it was accessible to people who are new to the series in a lot of different ways. So I honestly think, you know, Witcher 3 came out in what, like 2015?
Yeah.
And I say it's got to be one of the best RPGs and one of the best video games of all time. And that's a tough list, right? Like you're talking games like Doom, Quake, Tetris, like Command and Conquer, Tomb Raider, you know, other RPGs, you know, Final Fantasy, whatever. Like I think Witcher 3 personally is up there with the best of them. I was really impressed by that game. I wasn't honestly a huge fan of the show, though. The first season was very confusing to me, even as somebody who had played Witcher 2 and 3. I think Henry Cavill's great. He's a real video gamer. I think there's credibility in him playing the role. But I'm looking forward to season 2. I want to see what they do with it. I think it's just hard for me to follow. I think they jumped around in the timeline a lot. So it's just like, I don't know. I know a lot of people who like the show, but for me, it was just like,
For me, the show was interesting. I mean, I know of the Witcher series. I know of the video games. I haven't yet played them, but
you should just stop doing this podcast even right now and just go start playing Witcher 3, man. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, by the time I actually get to finishing it, it will probably be much.
You'll end up putting in like 250 hours into the game. It's like that. And they've got two big expansions, Blood and Wine and... what's the other one? I can't remember, but like, it's just the content, the story, the quality, the production is just, it's extraordinary. Yeah.
They really went all out when they were doing it.
Yeah. These CD Projekt Red guys. So they're a Polish game development company, and they also did Cyberpunk 2077, which is famous for being a fuck up.
They're putting in the hours to fix it.
Well, they are, and I really respect them for that. You know, like they would have to do a lot more harm than what they did to Cyberpunk 2077 to lose my love because of what they have done with Witcher. And not only that, Not only that, but CD Projekt Red, the guys that made Witcher, also run GOG.com, which is a DRM. They run GOG, which is the DRM-free online gaming store. Yeah. So they're good people, right? Like, they're trying to promote DRM-free software experiences in gaming. And I am 100% behind that. You know, I'm also an open source software fan and everything else. So, you know, they're good members of the tech community, as well as some heroes of the online gaming ecosystem. So, or rather the video gaming ecosystem, you know, their single player experiences mostly. But so, yeah, I'm looking forward to what they do with Cyberpunk in the long term, because Witcher 3 was kind of the same story. Apparently, it was a really buggy mess when they came out, and it wasn't until years later that it became what it's known for today. I don't think I played it until like 2018, like 3 years after it came out, and I'm kind of glad I did based on what I heard.
Hey, whenever you make time, you play it. I mean, I'm a guy who hasn't yet played GTA 5.
Right. I was actually just playing GTA 5 last night with some friends. We were over hanging out, just having a late night session.
Yeah.
Yeah, running people down on the streets of.
You enjoy that. I'll simply be patrolling the Mojave this side of Fallout.
You know, I've played a bit of Fallout, but it's a game I really need to give my full attention to, because, you know, I love Skyrim and Oblivion and even Morrowind, and Fallout's kind of the same thing in a different universe, but I've never really gotten too deep into it.
You should start from, well, I think if you can get to 1 and 2 in the tactics, but I haven't played those two either. I mean, I started from 3.
Yeah. I started from 3 as well, but again, I didn't go.
From good old games as well. So.
There you go. I like to spend my money on GOG whenever I can, right? I like to support that kind of thing. Much as I love Steam and what Valve and Gabe Newell and the guys have done with Steam, you know, GOG is my preferred.
Yeah.
Place to spend money. Yeah.
Yeah.
But while we're on gaming, I was thinking there's some funny stories about like Ugandan gaming history. So I was mentioning my friend Simon before, and Simon and I met at IHK back in like 2008. I came to Uganda in 2008, and he was the like lead IT consultant for IHK. And so when I came into IHK, I was the IT manager, and he was the head consultant for IT for the company. And so that's how we met, and we became really good friends. And we were both big into open source software and Linux and intellectual property reform and whatever. And so we started hosting Linux user group events. We got involved in the Internet Exchange together. But one of the other things that we did is we started hosting online gaming servers in Uganda, right?
Yeah.
And we did that using spare infrastructure we had in the server room at IHK. IHK didn't know this, but back in like 2009, 2010, we were hosting video game servers. I can't remember what games we were running. I think we might have been running Minecraft. We were running maybe, it's so long ago, I can't even remember what games we were running. But we were running all the gaming servers that people were playing on all the time on hospital server room infrastructure, because they had a fat internet connection, right? Like, this is back when this is back when a megabit was over $4,000, right? And $5,000 a megabit. And, you know, so we had this this internet connection. We had like, I think it was a 256K connection we were paying $1,062 a month for. But local connectivity through the Internet Exchange, I think, wasn't capped. And so we ran these... We started setting up online gaming servers there, and people would play. I mean, it was a small community at the time. I think it was COD4. I think we had a server up for. Mm-hmm. I never told the management, because they would have shut it down. But
what they don't know doesn't hurt them.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't cost them any money. I mean, like, it's really low bandwidth. These old online games were developed in a time when dial-up connections were the norm. And so, you know, it wasn't like it was interfering with our hospital operations, and we had spare capacity on the virtualization systems. And so it's like, fuck it. Yeah. Let's set up a gaming server.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. You're like, it's okay. It's okay. As long as someone's oxygen is not cut off.
Exactly. Did you ever come to the old gaming events we had with Gamers Nights, like at Alligators or at Mount Batten? We did one at Mount Batten one time. It was Quake 3, I think.
Actually, not particularly, but when you mentioned alligators, I remembered that I had heard the guys gaming over there at alligators. Because alligators, wasn't it that bowling? Was it that bowling?
Yeah, it was the old bowling place in Garden City. They had like an arcade off to the side that I guess hadn't really been used.
Yeah, I remember that. That bit, because it went around every now and again, but guys were gaming that side, and I was like, oh, okay.
We put up some cash. I can't remember how much it was for a Call of Duty or Quake 3 tournament. I can't remember what, but I remember She-Wolf won it. So I think the winner of Uganda's first like cash video gaming tournament was a woman, which is a pretty cool cool little fun fact.
Yeah. I have had a lot of jokes of guys that were gaming at Garden City. I mean, after the whole alligator thing stopped, guys went somewhere up the roof. But apparently, there was some drama of guys not buying stuff, so they were kicked out. But yeah,
problem that day. They didn't mind us being there. They wanted us to use the space and promote it. I mean, but yeah,
I mean, it did promote alligators because. You said gaming at alligators. I was like, oh, yeah, that happened at alligators. I was like, so the word did go out.
Yeah. And then those gaming servers that we were using that were hosted at IHK eventually became the Liquid Telecom servers, because I think it was like in 2013, I was in an internet conference in Casablanca in Morocco. It was an AFPIF event, the Africa Peering and Interconnection Forum. And we were there because... I was helping with the event, and also, you know, there because of my role in the Uganda Internet Exchange. And I met Ben Roberts there, who I was telling Ben Roberts was with Liquid Telecom. He still is with Liquid Telecom. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him about what we were doing with the gaming servers at IHK in Uganda. And you know, we were just at the bar having drinks. Mm-hmm. And then two weeks later, out of nowhere, he emails me and he's like, hey, what if we gave you like a free server and an unlimited connection to our international backbone network? Would you move your servers to Liquid Telecom? And we're like, yes. So Liquid Telecom bought us like a $15,000 or $20,000 server and gave us full access to their regional backbone that spans, like, at the time it was like 12 or 13 countries in Eastern and Southern Africa. And so we moved all of our servers to their system, and that's where they still are today. So when you play in Minecraft on the Gamers Night servers or Counter-Strike or whatever, you know, that was the evolution of that.
That was very nice.
And Ben Roberts and Andrew Alston at Liquid supported us with that.
I think I'll probably run into them or talk to them.
Yeah, at some point. I mean, they're over in Kenya. So if you ever make it back over to Nikon, you might see him hovering around. I think Liquid probably still sponsors the bandwidth. They did in 2015 when we hosted that international tournament.
I think there's going to be a Nikon this year, December.
Yeah, I just saw some advertisements for it. I'm glad to see that they're talking about a physical event again. You know, with COVID, it's really kind of hurt the community and the ability to get together like that.
Okay. Now, before we finish, I'd just like to ask, any more issues encountered in the gaming community, like bad gamers? that's obviously there, but...
What did you say?
Have you encountered any other issues in the community?
I mean, we've never really had any problems. Really here. I mean, aside from the challenges that we face trying to grow the community, I mean, everybody's cool, man. We've got this giant WhatsApp group. We used to have a big Facebook group. Everybody chats. Everybody's cool. We're starting to branch off into new games, like Splitgate is becoming popular now. It's a free-to-play arena shooter that's kind of in the spirit of Fortnite with the way that they, you know, have the interface and everything. But it's more like Quake, Halo, Unreal Tournament. That's one we've been playing a bit, but guys are all like, there's a lot of guys playing different games too. And some that I need to get into, but we've got a great community in Uganda. We just need to find a way to grow it. And that's why I was thinking in the beginning, when I was talking to you about doing the podcast and the GN channel, It might be a way to kind of like aggregate the community into one place so that we can do more. Because right now there's some fragmentation, right? There's a couple Discord channels. There's the Esports 256. There's the Gaming 256. There's the GamersNights.com, you know, and then you've got your thing here for the podcast. And that's all good. But like part of the problem we have is critical mass. You know, like Uganda's still a small community in terms of gaming. But I think if we all find a way to communicate in one central place, we can do more with it and organize better. And because we're not as big of and as developed as Kenya yet, but we're on our way.
Yeah, we're on our way.
Yeah.
Okay, Kyle, it's been nice to have you.
Yeah, man, I love what you're doing. I love that there's a gaming podcast now, and you know, and I'm really honored to participate, and keep it up, man.
All right, thank you.
All right, man, my pleasure.
Okay, so any final remarks, shout outs?
Just to the Gamers Nights crew. I'll shout out to the Gamers Nights crew. I mean, it's been awesome to be part of this community. Shout out to Liquid Telecom, Ben Roberts, Andrew Alston. Shout out to you know, all the people that have ever been involved in the UIXP, because without that we wouldn't be able to do online gaming. It's been an awesome time to be here and see all this happen over the last decade or so. So that's it.
Okay. Thanks for stopping by, Kyle.
All right, man.
Yeah, now I have to go edit this.
Cool. I hope it comes out well. I mean, it sounded like it was a good conversation to me. I think it flowed well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't very like stiff. Sometimes when you do this stuff, it ends up being like an interview. But I think the cool thing about chatting to gamers is that there's like a lot of common ground and you could just like go off into different directions.
No, like I said, I didn't even have to ask you most of the questions. Everything just came naturally. Like first experience with other gamers, favorite titles, everything just flowed naturally. So
have you ever thought about doing this as like a video podcast?
Yeah, actually I have plans for that.
Okay, because I have lighting equipment, I have lav mics for USB, and some other gear if you ever needed to borrow it.
Ah, okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, I would support that.
Okay.
You know, I look at those podcasts like Joe Rogan and stuff, and the format they have with people just sitting around the table, like having beers, smoking a spliff or whatever.
Actually, what I want to do in the future is that specifically, like a physical recording of the podcast.
Yeah. Get like three or four people, maybe even in the same.
So that I don't have any issues with that audio. If there's any issues with the audio, I can fix it right there and then, you know.
So what do you have? What you'd have to set up like a studio space somewhere, yeah?
Well, I have a friend who has a studio space. It's a work in progress, but baby steps.
All right, man. Well, if you ever, if you ever need anything, let me know if I can help.
Okay.
All right, man. It's been a pleasure. All thanks for inviting me.
Okay. Thanks, man.
All right. See you.